Former President George H.W. Bush was one of the speakers who paid tribute today to Gerald Ford.
Gerald Ford assumed the presidency when the nation needed a leader of character and humility. And we found it in the man from Grand Rapids. President Ford's time in office was brief, but history will long remember the courage and common sense that helped restore trust in the workings of our democracy.
Former President Ford was remembered today as a man of decency and courage in a funeral service at the National Cathedral in Washington. He was 93 when he died a week ago, and in tributes today he was honored for his military service, his leadership in the House, his guidance as president in a time of national turmoil after the Watergate scandal. After the funeral, the flag-draped casket of the former president was flown back home to Grand Rapids, Michigan. He will be buried there after services tomorrow. Now, if you would like to share your own memories of President Ford, you can give us a call. What will his legacy be? Our number here in Washington, D.C. is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or you can email us at talk@npr.org. We're going to turn to two people now who knew the late president, knew him well. Senator Alan Simpson is sitting in the studio. Senator, thanks very much for being with us.
Scott, I was nearby, and here I am wandering in off the street. Now, it was a wonderful service. It was a privilege to be there. Inspirational music, inspirational tributes, and it was a rare treat.
We also want to bring in Congressman John Dingell, a Democrat from Michigan. He served alongside Gerald Ford, although, of course, they were opposite parties in the 1970s. Congressman Dingell, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, I'm delighted to be here, and I want to say to my dear friend Alan Simpson, greetings, Alan. You're a great guy.
Dingell, if I'd known you were on, I tell you, this guy, John Dingell, and I had more fun. He a Democrat, I a Republican. We cared about each other. We did things together. We loved each other, and we trusted each other, and we did the nation's business. That's the only way to do it. And John and Debbie are great friends of Ann and mine, a thoroughly enjoyable friend.
Well, let me throw this one to both of you, and Senator Simpson, since we're looking at you first, and then Congressman Dingell. So many of the accolades accorded to former President Ford in the days since his death have seemed to center around just that point, that this is a man who knew how to do business with both parties, with all people. He was the sort of man who believed in bipartisanship. And there's just a feeling that the old-time courtesies, and for that matter, the very practical sense of people of different philosophies coming together to get things done and respecting each other in the process is lost now from policymaking in Washington, D.C. What's your reaction, Mr. Simpson?
Well, I found that true. I think, sadly, that television in the chamber, maybe certainly in the House, in the Senate, rather. I don't know how John would feel about it, but certainly the show horses showed up and the work horses seemed to go back in the stable. And, you know, here it'd be 7 and 8 o'clock at night, and you could see a person gravitate toward the microphone at the perfect hour that the time zone would be correct in their state. I mean, that's not the way to do the nation's business, and that was part of it. But my ranking members were Ted Kennedy, Gary Hart, and Al Cranston. All of them running for president. John remembers it was 1980, and I said, you run for president, don't use the committee for your quest, and I'll never embarrass you. And that's the way we did our work.
Congressman Dingell, can you help us understand that kind of collegiality?
Yeah. You're talking to a guy there in Alan Simpson that can tell you about bipartisanship and how you work together. He, like Gerry Ford, were fierce fighters. And they stood strongly for what they believed was right. But as the day ended, they were smart enough to know and decent enough to know that the nation's business had to be done and that compromise had to be achieved and that it could be found if the parties to the discussion were willing to hunt for it. So that happened in those days. I have to say it happens less now, and it's a great shame because the nation suffers for it, as we saw in this last session of Congress, where we simply couldn't get anything done.
Congressman Dingell, let me put your memory on the spot just a bit. When President Ford pardoned Richard Nixon, did you think it was a good idea? And if so, did you say that?
No, I did not think it was a good idea. And I said that I did not think it was a good idea. I have to say that, like a lot of others, including my friend Ted Kennedy, I've come to the conclusion that it was a wise judgment. And that President Ford, in pointing out that the country just could not, at the time and under the circumstances, confront the rather awful spectacle of a president being charged with serious crimes, in addition to crimes and misbehavior, the grossest sort, by influential members of his administration. And, you know, in the cold light of history, we tend to view things rather differently than we might have had done in times when the issue was hotter and the blood was higher and people were more intensely involved with less knowledge and chance to review the issues.
Mm-hmm. Senator Simpson, you, of course, were on the other side of the aisle, for that matter, in the other chamber, but would you have told President Ford, do what you want, but you're not going to win re-election if you do?
I think the animosity toward Nixon was so high among Republicans, too, who felt it was treachery for what he did. Mm-hmm. For me, as a young lawyer in Cody, Wyoming, just starting out really in the House of Representatives, I was appalled because most of the transgressors were lawyers. And I thought, a trial? With who will represent the President of the United States? The trial would have been interminable. The turmoil would have been unsurmountable. And I think I sat the game out, but I thought that at that time, because of the vehemence against Nixon for the deceit that he brought upon a party as a young partisan Republican, that I thought he ought to get his lumps. But Jerry Ford was right.
Mm. Congressman Dingell, is there a personal memory that's running through your mind today as you say goodbye to a friend?
Well, friendships are kind of funny things. They are bottom not necessarily on one event, but on a whole broad series of events and upon associations and very small matters and yet some very large matters. Jerry Ford was just a very, very decent human being. He was simple, uncomplicated, had wonderful sense of decency and good values. In addition to that, he was completely honest in the way he approached things. And while he fought hard for what he believed in, he always understood that the public interest required that things be done at the end of the day and that compromise be achieved so that great national issues could be disposed of. It was just impossible to dislike a guy like that.
I wonder if we can go to a caller now. William in Grand Rapids, Michigan. William, are you there?
Yes.
You're in Jerry Ford's hometown. You have a story for us.
Yes. I was in the Navy between 68 and 72, and it was about the 1970-71 time frame. My father was 55 years old, and he was going to have prostate surgery, and he asked me to see if I could get some time off for a couple weeks and come home and look after the apple orchard while he was recovering. So I put a request in, and it got turned down by my command, and I could not get leave mm-hmm. for the 2 weeks. So I notified my he lived in Belding, Michigan, about 30 miles east of Grand Rapids. And so he went down and talked to Jerry Ford, who was a representative at the time, and he told him the dilemma. And then one night when I was coming home late from being out, returning back to the ship, it was around midnight, 2 in the morning, somewhere in there, late. They told me I was granted emergency leave. And so I packed my things and I proceeded to return home to Michigan from Virginia, where my ship was home ported in Norfolk. And I was granted emergency leave for the 2 weeks that I needed to help my father run the orchard while he was recovering. And he told me that's what he had done.
Well, congressmen get involved in all kinds of things, don't they? And it's ones who do that that tend to get reelected as many times as Jerry Ford was.
Right, because my dad was a staunch Republican. And then when I returned back to the ship, my division officer was highly agitated about what I had done, going over his head. But there was nothing else I could do. I mean, I didn't really mm-hmm. go over his head. I just told my father I couldn't get off because they disapproved my leave for whatever reason. I told them the reason why I was going to take time off.
William, thank you very much for calling.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. Senator Simpson, Gerald Ford had, the evidence would suggest, a wonderful sense of humor. Mm-hmm. You're known for that, too. But he had to put up with a lot of humor at his own expense, didn't he?
Yeah, and if you learn to laugh at yourself, you get through those periods. And And it's interesting because you don't hear that talked about as much as the other marvelous things, the other attributes, but humor is a great was a great part of his life, and also John Dingell humor. Mm-hmm. That's where John and I lit it up. And then Mo Udall and I would do conference committees together. The staff used to leave because they knew we would sell the ship and never do what they asked us to do. But and Dingell the same way. I said, one conference committee, I said, Dingell, you told me you were going to wipe out this guy on the other side. Now, when is that going to happen? He said, my son, I will tell you when that will happen. Well, it was about 3 in the morning, and I looked over. I said, Mr. Chairman, he was chairman, I was chairman, Mr. Chairman, when will you do the act that you discussed with me some weeks ago? He said, eminently. And about half hour later, this guy's head just rolled across the floor. You can hear John laughing. John had a great sense of humor. That's what's missing. Humor is the universal solvent against the abrasive elements of life. Let me tell you, there are a lot of humorless people running around in Washington, D.C., who have forgotten the sweet oil of humor. Just humor. And the humor is the ability to laugh at yourself. The humor around here is making fun of somebody else and then laughing. And that's not a comfortable laugh. It's not a belly laugh that comes out of that. It's a very scratchy kind of, you know, like, oh, God, I didn't think you'd do that. So that I recommend to people. But Gerry Ford had a tremendous sense of humor. I met him first in 58 when he was campaigning for Keith Thompson, a Wyoming congressman. And then through the years as he campaigned for Cheney, Cheney and I were locked at the hip for 10 years, so I'd see him all the time. And then he came to Harvard for me. I asked him to come to Harvard while I was a visiting lecturer. He came. A marvelous day with Archibald Cox and John Kenneth Galbraith and Gerry Ford. I wish that had been recorded.
Boy. And, well, so do we. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We can sometimes forget that President Ford, a man who was almost universally acclaimed for his decency and his modesty, was somehow became the object of two thankfully failed assassination attempts. And we have a caller now in Reno, Nevada. Wants to talk about that column?
Yes. Hi. How are you today?
Fine, thank you. You wrote a letter to President Ford, I gather.
I did. When I was he was in office when I was a boy, about 9 or 10 years old, and I just remember that I felt so bad that people were poking fun at him all the time, and that people were especially making fun of him over these assassination attempts and calling him stupid for going out in public like that. And I wrote him a letter telling him that I felt that was not the case at all, that I felt that he was a very brave man to continue to go out among the people and be the leader that he was expected to be in spite of all this. And, I guess that's kind of what I recall about his character overall, is that, during that time of turmoil, I really didn't understand what was going on in the country, to a great degree. Mm-hmm. But I knew that things were not good, and I somehow felt a lot better when he was in office. I felt that he was someone, as a leader, that I could look up to and trust.
Well, Colin, thanks very much for calling. Thanks very much. Congressman Dingell, let me just return to that assassination question for a while, because we can forget that in many ways, it was a small and maybe not so small act of courage for President Ford to continue to go out in public after both of those attempts.
Well, first of all, I don't believe it was a small act of courage at all. It was, I think, given the poisonous temper of the times, an act of more than a little courage. And he, Gerry, should be respected for this. Now, you want to remember that presidents, all of them, have threats at their life. As a matter of fact, the particular month I'm recalling now, there were at least two attempts on Gerry Ford's life, mm-hmm. and on one of which the person was not very far from him, and actually had a .45 caliber pistol taken away from her. The other case I'm not familiar with, but it should be noted that now almost every president gets death threats almost by the bagful in Washington, and it's really a great shame, and it's one of the reasons that we have all this security. And you'll remember that people like Harry Truman used to go out for long walks with the Secret mm-hmm. Service, and Teddy Roosevelt was always out walking around or riding a horse or doing something like that. FDR was not out so much because his health was never really robust, although he was out amongst people all the time in a rather different way. But if you look, you'll find that presidents like Lincoln used to have job seekers in to talk to them, and the same was true clear through the turn of the century. As a matter of fact, if you'll recall, McKinley was shot, I think, by a guy he turned down for a federal job.
Yeah. We by the way, I want to tell our listeners that President Ford's body reportedly has arrived in Grand Rapids, and of course he will be buried in his beloved Grand Rapids there tomorrow. Senator Simpson, let me turn to you this day when you've said goodbye to an old friend, an old political adversary, but I think an old friend as you look at things today. What should we take with the lesson of Gerald Ford's life through Congress, through the presidency, through his military service, through his football playing even, or a loving husband and father?
One word, guts. He had guts. That's a little bit simplistic, but that's the essence of what he really was. You can take all the other adjectives that of course through the service and through the ceremonies, but he had guts. People admire people who have guts, even if they don't do the things they want them to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that, to me, is one of the best things about political life. That was what John Dingell has and had, and I know he's going to be tender to the Republicans over there now. Anyway, he's got guts, and he's going to
work with as you were, Alan.
That's right, John.
Thank you.
Take care, pal.
Congressman Dingell from Michigan, former Republican Senator Alan Simpson, joining us here in 3A. The body of President Ford has arrived back home in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and he will be buried there tomorrow. This is Talk of the Nation. From NPR News, I'm Scott Simon in Washington.